Are you buying a new home? Are you concerned that it might be time to lock into a lower mortgage rate on your current home? Are you thinking about buying investment property? Maybe you need an equity line to finally complete some home repairs or upgrades. John Hull of Mortgage Now can provide you with his expertise in mortgage planning, cash flow management, and real estate equity management. Let him help you find the lending solution which best suits your needs at a very competitive rate. Mortgage Now lending specialists share the belief that a mortgage transaction is more than a single customer encounter. It's an opportunity to build a client for life. Furthermore, owning a home is the foundation of a family's financial security. It's our role to help existing and potential homeowners make decisions that will best suit their long-term financial goals and objectives. John's dedicated to helping his clients achieve their dreams of home ownership, invest in real estate, increase cash flow, and achieve true financial freedom. Let John guide you through the home buying or refinancing process and provide you with the best service available. Call John at 216-373-2777 or visit his website at www.mylendingpodcast.com. That's 216-373-2777 or www.mylendingpodcast.com. Welcome to the Barbecue for You Show, the show where we talk about all things important to the world of barbecue. From big-name interviews to advice on cooking briskets and ribs, you'll find it right here on the Barbecue for You Show. If you're interested in learning more about barbecue, log on to our website at www.bbq-4-u.com. Get connected to the best forum on the Internet. And now, here's your program host, Greg Rimpey.
Greetings from the barbecue capital of the North Coast, Cleveland, Ohio. Wherever you are across this great country of ours, I appreciate you joining me for another episode of the Barbecue for You Show. Tonight we have a special guest. He is one of the premier pit manufacturers in the country and probably the world. And unless you've been under a huge barbecue rock, you've at least heard the name thrown around on barbecue boards and around the industry. I am, of course, talking about Dave Close, and he joins me right now. Dave, thanks for taking the time out to talk to me tonight. How are you?
Oh, you bet, man. It's a pleasure to be here.
Obviously, you're well known in the industry, but perhaps for those of us who aren't as intimately familiar with you, could you give us a little background about yourself and how that kind of leads you into the barbecue?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny because about 22 years ago, I started a small fab shop, and we got tired of Wendy's hamburgers and decided to build a pit for the shop, and I kind of got a little carried away after that and decided to just keep building and expanding out until I found a pit I really liked. And now with 400 sizes and God knows how many under our belt, I'm still looking for the perfect pit. I'm not sure it really exists, but it's fun chasing it. You've appealed to the scientific and the mathematical, you know, thinking on the curve and learning, engineering new things. I'd looked at the industry 20 or 22 years ago, and I wasn't really pleased with where it was. You know, it was seemed like it was still in its infancy. And I thought, well, you know, this is something I might actually be able to make a difference in and improve it, improve the quality, improve the sizes that they had. I remember 22 years ago, a 30-inch by 6-foot barbecue pit would have seemed absurd. That would have been gigantic.
Right.
And now, you know, that's, you know, you can put one of those on each foot and snow ski with them, you know. Not that big. I've seen some real monsters go through there in the last 20 years.
Before this whole closed barbecue pit thing came into reality, what were you doing prior?
Well, for when I was a teenager, I was in the iron mills working with, you know, 100, 200-ton stand-up pressure vessels. And then I went to the newspaper industry for 20 years. And when that kind of leveled out, then we went back to steel. You know, I like the there's no ambiguity in steel, you know. If you're a billionaire or a poor man, it's going to burn you identical. And yeah. I like the truism of that, and I stuck with it because you can always depend on it. And the fact that some of these men that get in this industry that weld are just phenomenal. I've seen them make me gun triggers, photon beds, curved glass furniture. I mean, just absolute artistry. And I'd love to turn them loose. You know, I'd love nothing better than to shut the shop down for 2 months and just look at the men and just say, show me what you got.
Right.
And they go, pits? I said, no, anything. What can you really make? I bet some of the things they would turn out of there would be phenomenal.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, where does that line of demarcation come down to where you're like, hey, you know what? I'm pretty good at this, and I got some people behind me. We're gonna take a run at this for real.
No, we really did build one because we get tired of hamburgers, and right. I got carried away from there. It wasn't really a spread out process. It was a fine line. One day I built a pit, and my family's police and firemen, and they started buying them. Then eventually we went wholesale, building for other companies, putting their brand names on them, which gave us the purchasing power, mm-hmm. you know, to go after the mills and things like that. And then after that, it was just a matter of, you know, taking it whatever direction we felt was appropriate, whether it was in higher quality steel or larger markets or promoting in the regions that didn't have barbecue. It, in my opinion, is still in its infancy. And I rate that on the assumption that the Aztecs barbecued 2,000 years, the Mexicans 1,000, Texas 200, and Oklahoma 9.
Right.
So it's, in my opinion, it hadn't even started in America yet. It's just now getting known for the smoking, and then we've traveled over to Western Europe and places like that cooking and trying to turn them on. A good friend of mine, Jingo Ikeche, that runs a lot of the cook-offs out in California, you know, I poured support and prizes and things like that into the cook-offs for about 10 years over there. One day he looked at me and said, you know, it's starting to kick a little bit. You know, you got to hang around and sell pits, right? And I said, nah, I'm gone. He said, you're gone? Where are you going? I said, Iowa. He said, there's no barbecue in Iowa. I went, exactly.
Right. Got to push out, got to expand.
It's the cutting edge. Yeah, you got to stay on the edge or you die, you know.
Right.
You always got to, you know, never look back. You know, like half of those shows and things that we've done, I've never even seen them. You know, you just kind of go, yeah, you did that. Yeah, what did you do today, you know? So you're always pushing on the outside of the envelope, trying to say, well, what can we do now that'll lengthen the burn time, or, you know, what kind of steel can we use that will improve it, make it a better skillet, you know, things like that.
So for somebody that was going to be looking to get a close pit, can you kind of take me through, you know, how the order process would work? I'm sure it gets customized, you know, for every phone call you get, but there's got to be kind of a general rule of thumb that you follow with most orders. Can you give us a little insight into how that would work?
Well, I'm not really sure what you mean by general. That's kind of, they really are handmade from start to finish. So it's, you know, you call me or the secretaries, you know, the phones ring here at night. You know, a guy called me last week, and he said, you know, why should I buy a – he was looking for a really large pit, $20,000 barbecue pit, huge. And he said, why should I buy from you? And I said, hang up and call back at 2:30 in the morning. He did. I answered the phone, close pits. I went, there you go. You know, we're right here 20 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right.
Not very hard to find. And that's – you know, you got to give service. I don't do business with answering machines. You know, people don't call you back. There's no such thing as too busy that you can't call a person back and find out what it is that they're looking for, you know. And the ordering of the pits, we'll take them through just a standard process of questions like, you know, where do you live? We're trying to find out altitude, barometric, you know, so we can make a recommendation, especially capacity, you know, how many people do they normally cook for? We don't want them to buy a pit too large, but we don't want them to buy one too small. We're going to try and fit, you know, get into their head a little bit and find out what's going to be the best pit, because they're taking advantage of the knowledge that we have. I've had 130, 140 of these things myself, mm-hmm. and I've cooked all over, you know, different altitudes and things like that, so there's recommendations that I can make. You know, we've been there. We've made every mistake 100 times already. You know, this wasn't no rocket science. It was pretty much trial and error and learning through decades of building them, you know, what to do and what not to do, listening to the public, you know, tell us that it'd be nice if it did this. And when the ideas were good, we put them on there for free.
Right.
And we're constantly improving them all the time.
Would you say that one of the biggest regrets that buyers usually have is they don't buy something bigger than they kind of originally conceptualize in their head?
Yeah, I would say so, because, you know, it goes along the old pricing structures they used to have that just have been embedded into people, that they think that twice as big a pit must cost twice as much. Well, maybe it does, but not in our company. You know, $100 can double the size of a pit because we're a manufacturer. We're not selling through dealers. So you know, the pits are designed to be last, you know, 100 years. So what do I care whether you buy a 3 foot or a 6 foot? All we're doing is paying for the extra pipe and the expanded metal to make the tables and angles and shelves. So it's the same labor. And actually, the bigger it is, the easier it is to make because you have more elbow room, so it's safer. So I try to, you know, get in their head, like say, with the conversation and find out what they're trying to do. And I always have a tendency to underplay things, especially in the mobile barbecue pits. People will say, okay, well, what does this hold? And if it feeds 300 people, I will tell them that it feeds 250. You know, just for safety, because they're always trying to underbuy, you know, to save money or maybe just stretch it to that limit and things like that. Right. And it's rewarding in the fact that, you know, a couple of weeks later, they'll always call back and say, well, you know, this holds a little bit more than you thought it did. I know.
Right.
I knew that. You know? And then they've even gotten a better deal than they thought it. After they spend years of research on looking for a barbecue pit, that's one of the reasons I got into this industry. I didn't want to build barbecue pits. I certainly never planned it. But I wanted a good one for myself, and this was before the internet. I looked around. It took me a year to find somebody that made them. I looked at his, and I waited a year, found a second guy, looked at his, and I said, well, the first one was better, so I went back to that, out of business. Oh. I went back to the second guy, out of business. You know, and I went, well, I guess I'll make my own. It was very difficult to find anybody that could survive the industry more than a year or two, you know. And what with steel, the way it's gone, you know, it's gone up 460% in the last 2 years.
It was going to be one of my questions was, you know, how has steel affected pricing over the last year or so? Because I had been in an industry for a period of time that, you know, was dealing with aluminum and steel. And when I had first joined, aluminum was a lot higher priced than steel. But by the time I left the company I was working for, steel was either just as expensive as aluminum, or in some cases, depending on you know what brand we were using, it was maybe a little bit more expensive than aluminum.
Yeah, copper's going crazy too. They say stainless one day you may have to whisper it. It's going to be so expensive. You know, it didn't affect. There's a couple of parameters to it that don't really affect us as much, because we took the hit decades ago to go to the prime steel market. I had to make a decision based on going through reject or surplus or whatever I could find on the secondary market to take it, biting the bullet and going direct and buying just, you know, the prime amount that you could pay for steel. I'm paying top dollar. You know, I don't think they could charge me anymore. But
don't say that.
Once I did that, after so many years, it incorporates into their payroll structures, and then when steel starts increasing because of the volume of the checks, you know, they go, well, look, you don't go by there, you don't talk to him, you don't send him a Christmas card, because they've already incorporated the money that we've given them in a 20-year period into their payroll structure. So me and the mill, we kind of take care of each other. We actually have a symbiotic relationship now where I can find the deals because they're in tremendous volumes. I mean, I just bought 1 million pounds of plate, and the plate I bought is triple quality. You know, it goes on a Brunel scale. A normal steel is like 30,000 pounds per square inch of Brunel. Well, this stuff's 92,000. It's triple quality, and I'm buying it cheaper because it's so hard, so high of a carbon content that it could mess up a shear or break. Wow. Well, we hand make things. So the comparison in cooking is like between an army tin plate and a 1-inch thick cast iron skillet.
Right.
The performance level on it's going to be phenomenal. And I have enough to make, I don't know, 3,000-4,000 pits, which I can always get more. So once you build up those relationships with the mills, after you buy them all Mercedes convertibles, you know,
right.
The rates they're charging you, then eventually, you know, they bite the bullet and they kind of roll over a little bit and say, okay, well, this kid's pretty strong, you know, he's not going anywhere. And you move up. You move up the food chain a little bit.
How many years have you been in business now?
22.
Okay.
22
You got a little time under your belt, I guess.
Well, it goes pretty quick. You'd be amazed. You'll find as you get older, it speeds up. It really does. So, you know, you're always chasing that MacGuffin to say, well, God, we got to get this improved. We got to get this rolling, because you can blink and it can be 10 years. you know, in a fab shop. Certainly when I started, I never wanted to wind up being a fat, balding guy with a cigar in his hand and a hat cord of half and half in his other, and then you become that taskmaster eventually, you know. I actually had a guy come in the shop once, and he said, "Oh, I remember that." And I said, "Eh, what are you on about?" And he said, "I had a fab shop for 15 years." And I went, "Eh, what do you mean?" He said, "Son," he said, "that cord of half and half in your left hand is for your ulcer, and that cigar in your right hand is for your nerves." And I took a swig and a hit, and I went, "Huh?"
Can't hear you.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the transition is subtle sometimes, but it's a never-ending process. You know, you could disappear for 2 or 3 years, and they go, "What?" You go, "Computers." And then you disappear 3 more, and they go, "Now what?" And you go, "High-density yield cargo containerization export packaging." They're going, "What?" I said, "Tell me about it, man. This is killing my third grade education."
I can tell.
That was the worst 8 years of my life. I looked over the guy next to me in third grade, and I said, "Grandpa, I'm quitting." Well, like I said, "You from Arkansas? You should run."
That's right. What as we speak, what if I were to place an order today, what's wait time for a new custom-made close pit?
Well, it depends. Sometimes we have them in stock, and then there's a rotation basis also. It's a multitude of levels. People will order a pit and then go to Europe for 6 months, things like that, and it'll sit there a while. If we can't get hold of them, then it rotates. So a lot of times we have them in stock, a lot of the models we have in stock, but worst scenario ever, if we didn't have a pit in stock, would be about a 12-week wait.
So are you
taking... A lot of the bubbles are handmade, so they have to be custom-made because one person wants one burner, fish fryer burner on the front, one guy may want five.
Right.
You know, and the size can... We have probably 200 sizes of mobile pits, so we can't stock them all. A lot of times there are also trade-ins and upgrades where people have it a year or two and then trade it in and get a lot bigger one. Those don't last very long, and the inventory on those changes weekly. So if people, you know, they can pick up some really great deals.
Right.
I've got a couple of mobile pits in there now that are about $1,200 off of retail, and they're brand new. They're mint.
Right. Well, I know there's a guy up here, you know, toward the Youngstown area that said he had put in a order with you for, it was like a tandem axle, pretty big deal, kind of like that Dave Hudson's pit out there in Mentor, but it sounded like it was a little bit bigger, and he, you know, he had a... From what he was saying, a pretty long wait, and he was, you know, already chomping at the bit to get his hands on it. So,
his boys and their toys. Yeah, you're talking about Kevin Livingston. That pit is a monster. It's 21 feet.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bloody big pit.
Anything with tandem axles
is usually
big.
It takes usually about a month and a half to make a pit. And what people don't understand, at our company, when the pit's completely finished, completely welded, it still goes through 2 weeks. A process. It goes through a day and a half of deburring, 5 days of painting, because we use the best paint and put 5 checker coats on it. Then it has to go through 3 days of tuning it, and I'll tune it actually to their altitude.
Wow.
And then it goes through a week of curing, because with 5 coats of paint, it might be dry to the touch, but it's not dry.
Right.
The base coats are wet for a week.
Yep.
So, you know, that's the quality. You know, you take all the edges off so kids don't cut themselves, because to them it's a metal horsey. You really have to think back. You and I have to think back quite a ways to remember that. But to a 5-year-old, that's a, you know, that thermometer is the saddle. It's going to grab it and saddle up. It's a metal horsey, man. So you try and protect them, and you know, make sure that people don't get hurt around them. When we put the gas injection in the pits, we build it and engineer it in such a way that people are forced to the safest place on the pit to light it. Things like that, but you know, I've been through the cook-offs 22 years, you know, and I've watched these guys, and you know, we're not building a pit for right now when you and I are talking. We're building it for when you've been up 30 or 40 hours catering or cooking and partying. We're trying to cover all those parameters and angles through experience to know, you know, what to do to the pits that makes it easier. We've taken off the edges. We've taken the legs off the steak grills and things like that, so people that party too hard don't fall on them and hurt themselves. I mean, it's just so many things, you know, that we've engineered through the years that seem to help, you know, every little bit.
I'm going to ask you to maybe brag a little bit here, but in your opinion, and you're the owner of the company, so obviously this is the most important opinion. What makes closed pits different from other ones that are available on the market right now?
Well, I would think the engineering and the quality of the steel, the variety by a long shot. You know, I'm not even sure. Honestly, I think we have over 4,000 sizes and models, plus the really odd, unique pits that they can have made. But, you know, I don't place us above anybody else. I just think that we're a little more accessible and have a little more variety. You know, we're willing to listen. Believe it or not, most of our ideas come from customers' 8- and 10-year-old children. I mean, some of the most innovative designs we have are from kids. I was standing there a few years ago, and I had a grill lit to the left, and I had a smoker lit to the right. One of my customers' 8-year-old daughters, the whole thing, ponytail, freckle-faced, red-headed 8-year-old girl, was sitting there in deep thought for about 10 minutes, and I walked over there because I listened. I said, "You got something on your mind?" And she goes, "Yeah, why don't you build them together?" It had never been done.
Huh.
And so we started building what I call composite pits, which are 2 or 3 separate pits on a line, on one pit.
Right.
And it was come from an 8-year-old girl. The air-cooled stainless handles was a 10-year-old boy. I had tried Bolivian rosewood, a boo-boo, zebra, bird's eye, you name it, trying to find a decent handle that wouldn't heat up. 10-year-old kid says, "Make one hoopy, the air goes through." Yeah, I threw the keys to the shop down. I said, "You want a job? I'll start you out small, like general manager."
I'm hoping these kids are getting royalty checks as the years roll on, right?
That would be bad, wouldn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's the kids that come up with the ideas. So we try to promote in the high schools and do the, you know, I went to a cook-off a couple of weeks ago for EquiSearch that looks for lost children, and I looked around the cook-off, and it was a new, it's a small cook-off. Now, not used to the ones that I go with the monstrous corporate and all that stuff, or, you know, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I looked at this cook-off very carefully, and it was young kids, you know, 20, 23, getting into cooking for the first time. So it recycles, you know, and I'm going, well, that's who we need to show. I want to do a catering webpage on the net. I'm going to tell everything I know, everything it took me 22 years to learn,
mm-hmm.
you know, all the little tricks and vending and stuff, because I've vended with some really monsters out there through the years, and they show me a lot of really neat little tricks. And there's things that can, I mean, stupid stuff like, say you have a barbecue pit that holds 10 racks of ribs. Well, if you lay a rack bone up and put a rack on top of it bone down, it not only cooks better and faster, you just doubled the volume of your pit for free.
Right.
Things like that. I mean, that's amazing. And there's a lot of stuff out there, a lot of shortcuts. It's a complicated thing, catering and vending and stuff. And you got enough problems dealing with the public and weather, so any shortcuts that people can provide that, you know, are infallible like that, that's just going to, you know, save them from going through the 10 years of blood and pain that it takes to learn all that stuff out on the road.
Yeah, it's always good to give back what you know, too. So that's always...
Yeah, you got to pass it on. Otherwise, the industry doesn't grow, you know. The idea is to get these things out to the public as economically as possible. You know, so if I had the money, if I was a gajillionaire, I would buy everybody in America a Weber kettle to get started, because half of them are going to move up.
Right.
You know, you got to decide whether you're suited to going outside and playing and enjoying cooking and things like that. So, I sympathize and empathize with people that are in the market as a nofus, looking around and trying to go, "God, well, what do I buy? I don't know what to do." Well, hit the phone and call me, whether you buy a pit from us or not. I will tell you anything I know for free.
Right.
I probably give away 4 hours of cooking lessons a night all over the world. Right. And, you know, I'm fascinated by it. It's not just the pits. It's the actual cooking, the vending, catering, the responsibilities for collating the events and setting things up. Like, we're working on one right now with Switzerland, Norway, and Russia, you know, trying to set something up, and it could be interesting. It'd be a lot of fun to put those countries together and see the different techniques, you know, that they bring to the table.
Right.
You know, Norway has this thing about cooking whole steers. I don't know what it is, but it's a real fetish with them.
You know? Whole steers.
Whole steers.
Get about pigs.
They do a lot of them.
That's right. Go to a cow picking.
Yeah, cow tipping. Start out cow tipping in the evening and cow borrowing at night, right?
That's right. one final question here before we get to contact info and all that good stuff. If close pits did not exist on the market and you were out to buy one, do you have one in particular that you would buy?
If I didn't exist?
Yes. If close pits didn't exist, if you existed yourself.
There's a multitude of differences. You know, it depends on the capacity that you're talking about and where you live. You know, the construction is important. You know, but the biggest tip that I could give people is judge what you're getting by one thing only, by weight. The more it weighs, the better it cooks. That's an inescapable truth of pure mathematics, that the heavier a pit is, the more even it's going to cook, the less fuel, the easier to use. And that is infallible forever.
Right.
And I think the only other uncontested truism is that we make the heaviest pits. Somebody had asked me about one of those eggs the other day. They said, what do you think? I said, am I building it? They went, no. I said, well, if it was better, I would be building it.
Right.
I really want to take this out all the way to see how far we can go with it. You know, how good can we get this? You know, how long can we make charcoal burn? Now, I'm tracking a rumor now that I invented a charcoal basket that, you know, just pour the coals in, light one in, and it'll go about 6.5 or 7 hours steady, repetitively.
Right.
Well, I'm tracking a rumor, which I'm going to test tomorrow, that I haven't had time to test before. A buddy of mine said he stacked the charcoal in there and got 17 hours.
Holy moly.
What a difference.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
about three
just
times
stacking
the better.
The charcoal. Now, I've seen Amy and Judy do that with Mad Mom and the Kid. Well, I cook with them all over the world, and she would stack her charcoal in there, and she was getting tremendous burn time. So, but I can't tell people that until I have actually seen it done myself 20 times.
Right.
Then I can tell them it will do it. But there's always a better mousetrap, you know. I don't think, you know, I think the name is irrelevant. You know, our name being on a pit, just telling them that it's well built, it's one piece, it's solid, and we're behind them all the way. I think that's the only thing behind that name at all.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, we're just like everybody else. We may be putting a little bit more steel in it and a little bit higher quality, and you know, but it's the follow through and the willingness to help, the willingness to learn ourselves that has created our existence in the first place.
Sure. So if somebody is interested in talking to you about looking into purchasing one of these or getting some consultation, what's the best way for somebody to get a hold of you?
Well, the 800 number rings at my house at night, and I'm up till 3 in the morning every morning.
I can vouch for that.
It's
10:45 here right now, and I called that number, and you did answer.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm always here. You know, I live and breathe this stuff, so, you know, they call the 1-800-487-7487, and that will ring at the house at night. I have secretaries during the daytime, but then it rotates over because I'll talk to California till midnight and then flip over to Western Europe.
Right.
So it's a literally 24-hour deal. So, you know, and they don't, once again, they don't have to buy a pit from us. If they want to talk about cooking, tell them to give me a holler, you know. I think there's enough time for all.
And you have a website out there, too?
Right. I was about to get to that. The www.bbqpits is pretty good. I just spent 3 months upgrading it, so I added about 300 new models. It's the stuff we've made all along, but people don't. We're visual animals. You have to show them. And I've still got over 250,000 photos I haven't processed from pits, so it's crazy. You know, they could get lost if they saw what we really made, you know, because those things can go anywhere from handheld to 88 feet, and it gets psycho, some of the stuff. And
handheld smokers.
Well, yeah, I'm doing one for Australia now. It's going to be a 3- or 4-car train on narrow-gauge railroad track, and it's going to have refrigerated salad bars built into the side of the coal cars. I mean, just phenomenal stuff, you know. No, those kind of projects are the ones that fascinate me because it's never been done before.
Right.
And that's what blows my skirt up is when we get to work on something that no one's ever done before, because you actually have it wide open. Like that Continental Airplane pit that we built is probably one of the prettiest pits I ever made. And it just had never been done. So we had to invent the firebox, had to invent the smokestack controls to go through the rudder assembly controls of the tail section of the plane up through the roof of the concession trailer. And there were so many challenges to it to figure out how to do it. You know, and it's not architects sitting there with pencils and drawings either. You're literally got your hands on the steel forming it and going, well, let's try this. And if that doesn't work, you cut it in half and start over, you know. It's really trial and error. And they can reach the email, david@bbqpits.com. But the phone numbers work better. I mean, it's my cell phones and all my battery of barrage of phone numbers that are published internationally. So, you know, they can feel free to call because I'm always here.
Some way to get a hold of you.
I'm a bit long-winded, as you probably heard from the rumors, you know.
Never heard about that.
Yeah, well, I love talking about cooking. And I mean, I'm sitting here in my kitchen right now looking at about 500 pounds of raw ingredients that I just bought the other day to make seasonings. And some of this stuff gets pretty exotic, you know, green peppercorns. My God, those are expensive. But
yeah, I can imagine.
there's you know, I had a couple of gals come by from next door neighbors the other night. We're standing outside, and they said, oh, that smells wonderful. I couldn't figure out what it was they were smelling till I realized after they left it, I had 400 pounds of peppers and, you know, garlic and, you know, raw bulk ingredients, and the spice is what they were smelling.
Man, yeah, it's got to be a treat to be a next door neighbor to Dave Close, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, I keep them well fed.
I can imagine.
We're always experimenting with the pits, lighting them to see what they'll do. So I do a lot of cooking, and there's no way I can eat 60 pounds of barbecue. So I give it to all the neighbors, and here lately in the last year, I've actually started doing turn-in trays to them. And they're going, well, you know, you don't have to do that. I said, that's not for you. I'm practicing.
Right. This is for me.
So it's a double-edged sword. It's a lot of fun, you know, to watch their eyes. When you got a couple of 60-year-olds come in and ring the doorbell half an hour after you give them a brisket done on peach wood, and when you open the door, they're 12 years old again. Their ears are pinned back, and they're going, Jesus Christ. You're going, good, huh? and that's the reward in itself, to see their eyes when they taste the food. And that's what I've liked doing in the industry, is going out and turning on people that have never barbecued outside before, because once they taste the quality of the food, it's just addictive. You know, they go, I want to do that. But probably 70% of the pits we sell overall are to people who have never cooked before. Mm-hmm. They ate at a friend of theirs' house a couple of weeks before and said, I want that.
Yeah, I think there's no denying the fact that however you've started in barbecue, it does become infectious and addictive to the point where you're trying to hone that craft from that day forward. And as evidence, barbecue forums all over the internet that, you know, people are, that's all they're talking about. They're posting pictures of food and they're talking about the way they cook and they're sharing secrets and tips. And it's quite a wonderful community that's happened.
Well, it's something that they'll never perfect. Because the engineering, food science, the tastes change every 2 or 3 years. That's why I tell people in barbecue pits, there is no perfect pit. And don't make a finalistic or fatal decision by saying, well, I just want one pit the rest of my life. That's not necessary. If it's set up with the whole program behind it, you know, your needs change every 2 or 3 years. I've had 120 or 130 pits myself. I change them like socks because I can, but the point being is, say you use a pit for a couple of years and you go, you know, I could use an extra foot, or I could use a steak grill inside, or burners and all that. One of the things I take solace in is the fact that you type five letters into the internet, KLOSE, and it is gone.
Right.
On eBay, they'll last about an hour. You know, you'll never see the big mobiles for sale anywhere. They won't sell them because they make too much money. So that's, I take, and plus the fact that I've noticed that our pits have appreciated 40% in the last 10 years.
Hmm.
I can't count the people who have called me and told me they bought a mobile pit for $5,000 10 years ago, used it every day, and then 10 years later sold it for
$7,500. Right.
And I'm going, I don't doubt it. You know?
Typically, those are items that you would normally tend to look to depreciate over a lifespan, but nice to know you're getting some extra interest on your initial investment.
Yeah, it really is. It's collector heirloom, things that last 50 or 100 years, you know, that's heirloom thing. You know, people asked me a long time ago, what do you want out of life? And I said, well, for starters, I really would like my grandfather's 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 ring. Where is it? You know, where's that?
Right.
You know, because if you don't have tradition, you have nothing. You know, integrity and honor is what this is all about. It's one thing I won't sell or trade. You know, that's why I make myself accessible to the public. Just the love of the sport, the nature of it, the nature of the beast, you know, the ever-increasing learning curve of steel, you know, as they develop higher grades and better qualities. And, you know, then as these kids get smarter going through school, they invent things, they come up with ideas we never thought of. You know, hopefully I can make a dent and do my damage before I totally touch my name. You know, hopefully I can make some damage, do some damage before I do some damage.
Right. Well, I think that's definitely a reason why you've been as successful as you have been, you know, here, you know, for the last 22 years. So I think that speaks well of you. Dave Close is the owner of Close Barbecue Pits. And once again, Dave, thanks for taking the time out to talk to me tonight. I do appreciate your candor and your insight on everything in the world of barbecue and cookers. So thanks for joining me.
Well, you bet. Anytime, man. Feel free to call.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
All right. We'll see you.
So big thanks once again to Dave Close for joining me this evening. If you are interested in learning more about Close Barbecue Pits and you want to talk to Dave about some consultation on what pit would be the best for you, you can do so by dialing the 800 number, which is 1-800-487-7487. Again, that's 1-800-487-7487. You can also visit the website at www.bbqpits.com, or you can email Dave directly at david@bbqpits.com. Hey, guess what, folks? That's the podcast, and I am out of here.
Are you buying a new home? Are you concerned that it might be time to lock into a lower mortgage rate on your current home? Are you thinking about buying investment property? Maybe you need an equity line to finally complete some home repairs or upgrades. John Hull of Mortgage Now can provide you with his expertise in mortgage planning, cash flow management, and real estate equity management. Let him help you find the lending solution which best suits your needs at a very competitive rate. Mortgage Now lending specialists share the belief that a mortgage transaction is more than a single customer encounter. It's an opportunity to build a client for life. Furthermore, owning a home is the foundation of a family's financial security. It's our role to help existing and potential homeowners make decisions that will best suit their long-term financial goals and objectives. John's dedicated to helping his clients achieve their dreams of home ownership, invest in real estate, increase cash flow, and achieve true financial freedom. Let John guide you through the home buying or refinancing process and provide you with the best service available. Call John at 216-373-2777 or visit his website at www.mylendingpodcast.com. That's 216-373-2777 or www.mylendingpodcast.com.